Hello and welcome. You are tuned to Radio Prague. I'm Brian Kennedy, and we begin the program with a look at the latest news. The Czech Republic will probably take its turn at the helm of the rotating European Union presidency in June 2008, but will share that responsibility with France and Sweden, the Czech Foreign Minister, Cyril Svoboda, announced on Monday after meeting with his French counterpart. Individual member states have traditionally held the EU presidency for half a year, but following the historic enlargement of the Union from 15 to 25 members last May, the system was deemed impractical. A district state attorney in Ostrava has extended by 1 month the deadline for a police investigation into an alleged attempt last year to bribe the government coalition MP Zdeněk Koržistka. The district attorney said he wanted more time to look into certain aspects of the case, but said there was not enough evidence to reopen criminal proceedings. The two former suspects in the case have close ties to Civic Democratic Party leader Mirek Topolánek. The two men were alleged by Mr. Koržistka to have offered him a large sum of money and a diplomatic posting to vote against the government in a confidence vote held last year. Police investigators have begun looking into how the senatorial campaign of former Health Minister Marie Sochkova was financed. The investigation comes on the heels of abuse of office and breach of public trust charges filed against the former Health Minister last week in connection with an ongoing arbitration case against the state. Ms. Sochkova has not made public who backed her failed senatorial bid or said how the money left over from the campaign was spent, but she has rejected accusations that she profited in the Diag human arbitration case or diverted legal fees to her campaign. The Prague-Ruzhne International Airport cleared a record-high 9.7 million passengers in 2004. That's a year-on-year growth of almost 30%. The Czech Airports Authority said a new terminal would be opened next year to meet the added demand. This would raise the Ruzhne Airport capacity to 10 to 15 million passengers annually, but in the meantime, more flights will have to be scheduled for off-peak hours. The Minister of Culture, Pavel Dostal, is the most popular Czech politician, this according to the latest opinion poll taken in January by the STEM agency. Mr. Dostal, who is battling cancer, displaces Petra Buzková, the Minister of Education, from the top spot. The least popular politicians, according to the poll, are Health Minister Milada Emerová and Regional Development Minister Jiří Paroubek. The least known cabinet member is the Deputy Minister for Economic Affairs, that's one Mr. Martin Jan, who is unaffiliated to any political party. And finally, the weather. Temperatures over the next few days are expected to stay below freezing, with maximum daytime highs of minus 2 degrees Celsius. Light to moderate snowfall is expected throughout the country. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's all the news for now.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Kate Barrett. Coming up, is there a Russian mafia in the country's most famous spa town of Karlovy Vary? We'll look at how the Czech Republic is working to change its image abroad. And as part of our series on remembering the Holocaust, we have a special interview with a Czech Holocaust survivor in today's one-on-one.
One was holding on to life and seeing these fires and the chimneys every day was simply unbearable.
That and the latest in Czech science coming up, so please stay tuned. Are there Russian mafiosi in the renowned spa town of Karlovy Vary? The locals have been speculating about the matter for years. Ever since nouveau-riche Russians started buying up vast estates and property in the historic West Bohemian spa town. Now the regional governor wants to know the answer to that question and has asked the Czech intelligence service to provide him with an answer. Daniela Lazareva has the story.
It is a city that has hosted kings and poets known as Carlsbad west of the Czech Republic's borders. Now a local paper is asking whether Karlovy Vary has become a city of mafiosi and potentially terrorists. In a recently published article, the paper accuses the governor of pandering to money and caring little who he sells the city's property to. This follows the sale of a grandiose local villa to a Russian-owned firm, which some say has very dubious credentials. According to the paper, it is the latest in a series of such sales. Affronted, the governor of Karlovy Vary, Josef Pavel, has asked the BIS, the Czech Intelligence Service, to clear up the matter and establish whether there really is a Russian mafia in the town or whether it is just anti-Russian prejudice. If there is Russian mafia in Karlovy Vary, I want to know who these people are, he told journalists. He had hoped for a statement that would put an end to the speculation, but the BIS made it clear that whatever it uncovered, it would not be reporting back to the governor. It is most unusual for us to be contacted in this manner, the BIS spokesman said in reference to the governor's request. The intelligence service will now launch an investigation and report directly to the interior minister. It will then be up to him to decide whether or not he will brief the Karlovy Vary governor about the result. Asked by Radio Prague to comment, the governor said he would not say another word about the matter until he had seen the results of the investigation. He claims that he has a moral right to information, since he himself was a target of the alleged anti-corruption squad Mlin, which has now got the Prime Minister into hot because no one knows how it operated or what it uncovered.
Thanks, Daniela. Like the governor of Karlovy Vary, the Czech Republic is also fighting to clear its name, and more specifically, to rectify its image abroad.
Tell you what, mate, all the fittest birds are in the Czech Republic. Supermodels, every one of them. And the blokes here, they live like kings. And they got the best football team in the world, and the beer.
A TV commercial selling a Czech beer brand. This is how many Czechs would like their country to be seen abroad. But many others would prefer a slightly more sophisticated image. So how should the Czech Republic sell its image abroad? That's a question that the government is trying to answer as it launches a new campaign to promote the country's image. Martin Mikulay reports.
Despite the image suggested in the beer ad, surveys suggest that the dominant picture of the Czech Republic abroad is a rather backward, rustic, post-communist country. They would like to present it more as a modern, dynamic state. In order to promote the Czech Republic abroad and to attract even more tourists, the Czech Tourist Agency last year launched a campaign accompanied by TV commercial spots in a number of world media under the slogan Come to Slow Down. But Jana Adamcová from the Foreign Ministry says that this campaign unfortunately did not help the country's image very much.
The message that people that I asked understood from this campaign was that nothing is happening here. And if you saw this TV commercial, you could see only forests, you know, and countryside. And this is the image of not developed country, country without no infrastructure and so on and so on. And this is an image that we are not happy that a state agency is promoting. I think that any presentation activities should be focused much more on the modern aspects of the Czech Republic, on the current situation, current living standards.
Pavel Černoch, who is the head of the Czech Center in Brussels and whose job is to promote the Czech Republic abroad, says that his country's image varies among people of different generations and nationalities.
When you talk to Belgians, especially older people who remember the events of 1968 and 1989, they still have an image of Czechoslovakia in their head. And when they speak about our country, they often refer to Czechoslovakia. Then there is this irreversible image in terms of that there is an East and the West. But that is very, very much tied to the older generation. Younger people, they just take it as a fact that there is an interesting country called Czech Republic with a beautiful city of Prague, and it's part of Europe. Now, my job here is to try to convince the older people that something has changed with EU enlargement, that 15 years we have been working very intensively about reforming our economy, our political system, in order to join the European Union and to come back in Europe as a dynamic, open, democratic and prospering country.
But the image also changes with how far you get from the Czech Republic.
The United States are definitely a different place because we have had strong immigration to the U.S., so being Czech is actually quite something people are proud of in the U.S., even though their ancestors might have come in the 19th century. So there are a lot of associations like Sokol, like Czechoslovak genealogical societies and such, who take care of the heritage. In other countries like Germany, for instance, we have, of course, an image of a neighbor. When you go further, like Italy, Spain, Sweden, Britain, Ireland, it becomes a little bit more difficult because not so many people travel and we're not on their radar screen. So here we have to start completely new and get people interested in the country by exhibitions, by music, by especially scholarships and bringing people on university exchanges, professional exchanges to the Czech Republic.
That was Pavel Černok, who is the head of the Czech Center in Brussels. You're tuned to Radio Prague, and don't forget that you can hear all these reports and read them as well on our website at www.radio.cz. We have more on projecting images now, only this time it's projecting false images. In a culture where people often tout their academic titles not only on their calling cards but also on their doorbells, the Czech media had a field day with revelations that a top interior ministry official never graduated from high school but happily used the title of engineer, the Czech equivalent to a Bachelor of Science degree. Brian Kennedy reports.
Academic and job titles are of great importance in Czech culture, in both verbal and written address. A quick scan of the mailboxes in your average apartment house will yield an array of doctors, magisters, engineers, and PhDs. If your landlady's name is Jana Novakova, for example, you might address her as Pani Domatsi, or Mrs. Landlady. If she has a graduate degree, she may well prefer to be called Pani Magistra, or literally, Mrs. Holder of a Master's Degree. You may commonly refer to your boss as Mr. Director, and so on and so on. So little wonder that engineer Jiří Vacek, an interior ministry expert in the fight against illegal drugs, has found himself the subject of ridicule after the weekly magazine Týden reported that he not only had no right to use the Mr. Bachelor of Science title, he didn't even graduate from high school. Mr. Elementary School graduate doesn't quite have the same ring to it. The media also had fun with the fact that Mr. Too Cool for School Vacek had been named Friar Roku, something like Dandy or Lady Killer of the Year, by the organization Families Against Drugs. Mr. Vacek, who may be guilty of resume padding but has not broken any laws, will remain in his post. However, he will be getting a new brass plaque on his office door, minus the title engineer. We can presume he's ordered some new business cards as well. The whole affair is reminiscent of the 1996 scandal, which saw the resignation of half a dozen politicians who had been using the title Doctor of Law without having the academic degree to back it up. Among them was the former Justice Minister Jan Kalvoda. In 1997, a special parliamentary committee was formed to investigate the validity of deputies' academic titles, but the volunteer vetting hasn't yet reached the ministerial level.
And our thanks to Brian, Mr. Bachelor of the Arts, Kennedy, for that report. One of the many things that took the Czech Republic after the fall of communism was the arrival of plastic bottles. Although there had already been a very efficient system of recycling glass bottles, plastic bottles swamped the country in no time. It took around a decade for recycling bins to appear in the streets. But often those who go to the trouble of finding the right bin find it overflowing. Now two inventors from the city of Ostrava have decided to solve the perennial problem once and for all. That's in today's Czech Science with Pavla Horáková.
Let's admit it. Although recycling plastic bottles may make us feel good, it is a hassle. First, you have to remove all lids and labels, wash out the bottles and squash them. Until your next trip to the recycling bin, the empty bottles get in the way wherever you saw them. With the revolutionary new bottle, designed by two inventors based in the North Moravian city of Ostrava, Otto Mušálek and Josef Zbořil, much of the nuisance goes away. Otto Mušálek describes his initial idea.
My idea was to make a bottle whose volume could be easily reduced. It was obvious that it should fold like an accordion. But the first prototypes did not work because of certain properties of the plastic, so I had to adjust the design of the bottle.
It took the inventors a year and a half to finalize the prototype, which is now ready for mass production. They have also filed an international patent application. The trial product is a half-liter bottle, but the parameters, such as the number of foldable ribs, can be altered for different bottle sizes. The inventors also gave some thought to the problem of bottle labels.
Ta etiketa, to je skutečně taky problém, protože
If you remove the label from a regular bottle, some glue always remains on the plastic. That has to be removed at the sorting facilities using heat and polluting chemicals. So we designed a label that can be hooked round the neck of the bottle and then simply torn off. Also, it is made of paper, which is easily recycled. So you end up with pure raw materials, which can be used to make a variety of end products, even new bottles.
So what do you do with the new bottle once you have drunk the contents? After unscrewing the cap and removing the label, you simply compress the empty bottle with a slight hand pressure on the upper part of the bottle. It folds neatly thanks to a complex system of ribs to produce a flat circle of plastic that doesn't take up more space than a powder compact. And, according to the inventor Otto Muschalek, all that was inspired by a simple idea: not to regard used plastic bottles as waste, but as precious raw material.
Thanks, Pavla. It's now time for One-on-One, our regular interview program. This week, as part of our special series Remembering the Holocaust, Ian Willoughby speaks to Zuzana Ružičková, a Czech-Jewish Holocaust survivor, about her experience during the war.
Zuzana Ružičková was born in Pilsen in 1927 into an upper-class Jewish family, a family that was soon to be decimated by the Holocaust. Only she and her mother survived. When I visited her in her Prague 3 flat, she told me how life had gradually become unbearable for Jews after the Nazi occupation.
We had to wear yellow stars, and we were forbidden quite a lot of things, to go to the cinema, to travel with the tremor bus. It came gradually, you know. At first one thought, well, this will pass. And then came another thing and another forbidden thing. And then we had to leave the school, and then we had to leave our flat. There was always this faith, this can't last long, and the war won't last long, and the Nazis won't last long. So in the end, although my family, my father was 4 years in America with his family in Chicago, and we had affidavits, so we could have very easily left. But my father was a great patriot, Sokol, that was a very patriotic club. And he said one doesn't leave one's country when it's in dire distress. So he stayed. In the end, we went first to Theresienstadt.
Tell us about Theresien. The Nazis famously or notoriously tried to present Theresien as a kind of model concentration camp. What was it really like there?
Well, first of all, there was a lot of hunger. Of course, it was very, very inconvenient and stressing. On the other hand, the elite of Europe was in Theresien. As far as the cultural life was concerned, it was extraordinary. Maybe I only after the war realized how extraordinary it was, because I was only 14 when I went there, and I imagined everywhere was such a climate of cultural and scientific celebrities as I was used to in Theresienstadt.
When you heard that you were being sent to Auschwitz, did you think that was the end?
Well, we didn't know we are being sent to Auschwitz. We were told that we are being sent to a working camp somewhere in Poland, but there was no mention of Auschwitz. That was still a secret. But I had some doubts about it, because I knew Fred Hirsch, you would have heard about him, and he was one of the people who met the famous Bialystok children. It was a group of children who suddenly appeared in Theresien, very emaciated, but the children, when they went to the showers, started to cry and to weep. Evidently, they told something about the gas chambers, and Freddy Hirsch came into contact with them, though he shouldn't have. He was sent to Auschwitz because of that. And he told some of it to his friends. And through this, I knew something about it.
How long did you spend at Auschwitz? And do you have any particular memories, for want of a better word?
I spent in Auschwitz almost half a year, almost 6 months. And I was at the children's home, which was something which Freddy Hirsch managed to get from the Nazis, from the SS. In that children's home, Freddy Hirsch and all the other pedagogues there tried to get the children a feeling of some normality, of not lying, of not stealing, of being honest citizens, of trying to be clean. And this was something which saved not only quite a few of the children, some of them, of course, were not saved, also quite a few of the pedagogues, because there was not such despair. There was some sort of not quite hope, because we knew that we would go to the gas chambers, but a sort of hope for humanity.
How did you find living day to day? Were you full of despair, or did you go about daily tasks?
Both. One had to go about daily tasks, and one was full of despair. I still am feeling very guilty because I was not managing my despair very well, so that my mother saw how afraid I was of death, and I'm regretting that very much. It must have been terrible for her. But of course one was holding on to life and seeing these fires and the chimneys every day was simply unbearable.
You went from Auschwitz to work, I believe, in Germany, in Hamburg?
Yes, that was a lifesaver, because the Allies were invading, and the Germans needed workers. So out of the 5,000 which should have gone to the gas chambers of my transport, 1,000 men and 1,000 women were chosen for work in Germany, and myself and my mother were miraculously chosen.
Do you recall the moment when you realized that the Germans had lost, that the war was effectively over?
The Germans had us building or traps for tanks, and then we had already shooting, and we realized that the Allies were very near. Then the Nazis left and didn't leave us any water or any food, but the Allies didn't come. For 3 days we were there, trapped without food and without knowing what's happening, until the British came the third day. We didn't realize until the last minute, until I think the afternoon of the 15th of April, when the British armed forces came into the camp, that we were really liberated, that the war was over. And by then, myself and my mother and most of the girls who survived were so ill that we didn't even have much strength to celebrate.
This Thursday is the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. There are many memorials taking place. What do you think is the importance of such memorials?
Well, that's quite easy to say. The importance is, first of all, to warn against any dictators and against any terrorists who could again do the same thing, or who even do it now. And the second thing is, of course, to warn against things like the Auschwitz lie. The more we die out, we survivors, the Auschwitz lie will spread, because it's a terrible thing for humanity to remember. So these days, Memorial Days, are for me very, very important.
Ian Willoughby was speaking there to the remarkable Zuzana Ružičková. One thing they didn't discuss is the fact that she is one of Europe's most highly regarded harpsichordists. She's performed in concert halls around the world and has made dozens of recordings. We'll leave you now with Zuzana Ružičková playing Scarlatti's Sonata in A major for the harpsichord.